Call the January 18th, 2024 meeting of the Board of Minerals and Environment to order. Secretary, call the official roll.
Blumhart?
Present.
Ewing?
Present.
Greenfield?
Present.
Gary Hay?
Present.
Carpen? Not here. Morris?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
And Chairman Haig.
Present. Quorum is present. Before we get started with the meeting, I'd like to welcome everyone participating in today's telephone conference call meeting or listening online. This meeting is streaming live on SD.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants, including board members, please identify themselves when speaking during the meeting. Please mute your phone when not speaking. Meeting is also being recorded and the audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Commissions Portal, follow the link, and select the name of the board. Okay, moving forward to our first order of business would be the approval of the minutes from November 16th, 2023. Are any corrections or additions to those minutes? Hearing none, I entertain a motion to approve. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Doyle Carpen. I'm arriving late.
All right, Doyle, glad to have you.
Blumhart moves to approve.
This is Gary Haig, I'll second.
Blumhart moves to approve, seconded by Gary Haig. Any further discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, Secretary, call roll and approval.
Blumhart?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Haig?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Haig?
Aye. Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Next order of business is the mining issues consent calendar. Mr. Klein, are you present?
Yes, Mr. Haig, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Okay. Any member of the board, first of all, would like any of the mining consent calendar issues pulled for separate consideration or have any questions regarding the consent calendar issues?
Morris moves to approve.
Motion by Morris to approve the consent calendars or second.
Ewing second.
Okay, so yes. Moved and seconded to approve the consent calendar. Secretary, call the roll on the motion.
Blumhart?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Haig?
Aye.
Carpen?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Haig?
Aye. Motion carries. Consent calendar is approved.
Chairman, that's
What's that?
That's what you call Bob.
Oh, okay. Well, get used to it, huh? All right, move on to the next item of business is the transfer of small-scale mine permit 417 from Fred and Andrew Krejci to Shirley and Andrew Krejci. Mr. Holm, are you there?
Yes. Shirley and Andrew Krejci have requested transfer of small-scale mine permit 417 from Fred and Andrew Krejci. The general location of the permitted operation is approximately 3.5 miles west of Lead, South Dakota. Under SDCL 4516-47, any mine permit can be transferred from one operator to another with the successor operator assuming all reclamation liability. The complaint transfer application form and the $100 transfer fee was submitted on November 13, 2023. The $2,500 replacement surety was submitted on November 23. On that replacement surety, the $2,500 reclamation bond is replacing the current $2,000 reclamation bond. The bond is being increased to the maximum $2,500 bond amount for small scale mine permit. The application was considered complete on November 20th, 2023. Our recommendation transfer, the permit was prepared on December 12th, 2023, and it was published in the Black Hills Pioneer on January 4th and 11th, 2024. We're still waiting for the affidavit of publication, but I went online and confirmed that the publication or the notice was published on those dates. After reviewing the South Dakota Public Notice webpage. We also placed a notice on the DANR Public Notice webpage. We did not receive any intervention petitions. Under SDCL 456B47, the board cannot deny a mining permit transfer unless the operation is not or cannot be brought into compliance with all applicable federal, state, or local laws, or the successor operator is in violation of state mining laws or mine permit conditions for any mining operation in the state. The current mine permit and Shirley and Andrew Krejci are in compliance with all federal, state, and local laws and regulations. Shirley and Andrew Krejci also submitted a certification BAP conform and disclosed no violations. Our recommendation is to transfer small-scale mine permit 417 and liability Fred and Andrew Krejci to Shirley and Andrew Krejci, release CD number 03-0005-9853, First Interstate Bank, Omaha, Nebraska, in the amount of $2,000, and accept CD number 242-778, First National Bank, Rapid City, South Dakota, in the amount of $2,500.
This appears to me it's an interfamily transfer there, Mr. Holm.
Yes, Fred Krejci passed away in April 2023, and his wife and son requested to take over the mine permit.
Okay. All right. Further questions from the board on the transfer of the small-scale mine permit? Hearing none. Motion by Morris to approve small-scale mining permit transfer 417.
This Carpenter is Gary Hague. I second.
Okay, Gary, second. Motion by Morris, second by Hague to approve. Further discussion on the transfer of small-scale mining permit 417. Hearing none, Secretary will call the roll.
Blumhart?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hague?
Aye.
Harpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
And Chairman Hague?
Aye. Motion carries. Transfer permit is approved. Next order of business is the acceptance of financial assurance bond for Wharf Resources, Inc. Mine permits 356-434-435-464-476-490. Mr. Holm.
Wharf Resources USA Inc. is asking the board to approve the exchange of the United States Fire Insurance Surety Bond, which serves as Wharf's cyanide spill bond financial assurance, for a new surety bond issued by Sirius Point America Insurance Company. I believe Matt Zietlow of Wharf and Stephanie Kuntz of Wharf's bond broker Marsh are on the line. Can you confirm that, Matt and Stephanie?
Yeah, hi everyone. This is Matt from Wharf Mine online here.
And hi, this is Stephanie Kuntz. I'm online here.
Thank you.
On December 13th, 2023, Wharf submitted a new surety bond from Sirius America Insurance Company in the amount of $807,300. information on Sirius Point American Insurance Company was included in the board package for the board review. The department has recently reviewed the ratings for Sirius Point American Insurance Company, which are as follows. AM Best ratings, finance strength and long term are A-, which are excellent and stable. Standard & Poor's finance strength and long term ratings are A-, which are strong and stable. Moody's did not, I cannot find a Moody's rating for the company. And then Fitch, their long-term rating is A-, which is high credit quality and stable. Sirius Point American Insurance Company is also a certified company listed on the U.S. Department of Treasury's circular. Please note the surety exchange has not increased the current $807,300 cyanide spill bond. That bond will be reviewed and updated as needed this spring. The department's recommendations to release surety bond number 612-408-650, United States Fire Insurance Company, in the amount of $807,300, and accept surety bond number SPA-1503-47002, Sirius Point American Insurance Company, in the amount of $807,300.
Questions of the board for Mr. Holm or for the Wharf folks that are online or on the phone? Mr. Holm, so you, from the department standpoint, you're recommending this. You think that the company is solid, this Sirius Point? To order to protect the state's interests?
Yes, with the ratings I reviewed, I feel that way. Stephanie, do you have anything to add to that?
I would agree that Sirius Point is a strong and solid surety provider, and in addition to the credit ratings that Mr. Holm had shared just now, I wanted to also mention that their U.S. Treasury listing is in excess of $50 million, so they are a very strong surety.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Stephanie. Further questions from the board on the substitution of bond by Wharf Resources?
Chairman Hegg?
Yes.
Mrs. Ewing, I would like to make the motion for acceptance of financial insurance bond for Wharf.
Okay, motion by Ewing for acceptance of the transfer of bond, release of Fire United Fire Insurance and acceptance of Sirius Point America. Is there a second to that?
Blumhardt, second.
Motioned and seconded. Discussion on the motion to approve. All right, hearing none, Secretary call the motion to approve release and transfer of bond from United Fire Insurance to Sirius Point American Insurance Company.
Blumhardt?
Secretary.
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hegg?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
And Chairman Hegg?
Aye. Motion carries. Transfer of the bond is approved. All right, the next order of business of the board today is the legislative update, mining and mineral exploration. Mr. Lees, are you present?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Hegg. Good morning, members of the board. I am excited to bring you news of legislation related to mining and mineral exploration. The department has been working with Senator Divert of District 31 on some long-needed revisions to the mining and mineral exploration statutes. The draft bill hasn't dropped yet, so I don't have a bill number, but the bill title is an act to revise requirements for mining and mineral exploration. Some of the key proposed changes addressed concerns the board has expressed for many years. The bill contemplates changes to SBCL 45-6. That's our sand, gravel, and construction aggregate mining statute. Also, SBCL 45-6B, the South Dakota Mine Land Reclamation Act, and 45-6C, the South Dakota Mineral Exploration Act. So there are changes to all three chapters proposed. So I'm going to kind of break it down chapter by chapter and give you an overview of what the proposed changes are. Starting with 45-6, that's construction aggregate, sand and gravel mine licenses. I'll give you a little background first. Prior to 1983, all mining operators in the state were required to obtain a mine permit pursuant to Chapter 45-6B, so that regardless of what type of material they were mining. In 1983, legislative revision of the laws related to construction aggregate mining resulted in a separate chapter, SBCL 45-6, sand, gravel, and construction aggregate mining, designed to streamline and simplify the permitting and regulatory process for sand and gravel pit operators. So that's the history lesson. I'll get into the proposed changes with this bill. The first proposed change to the sand and gravel chapter is revising the list of materials mineable under a mine license to include limestone mined for agricultural use. Section 45-6-65 currently allows operators to mine the following materials under a mine license, and those are sand, gravel, rock to be crushed and used in construction, pegmatite minerals, or for limestone, iron ore, sand, gypsum, shale, pozzolan, or other materials used in the process of making cement or lime. So currently, operators mining the same limestone from the same pit are required to go through two divergent regulatory processes depending upon the rock's intended use, creating an unfair regulatory framework for operators producing lime for agricultural use. Since the potential environmental impact and overall scope of reclamation liability is the same regardless of the limestone's intended use, 45-665 needs to be changed so all limestone mining is covered under the streamlined mine license process. So that's one of the big changes under the sand and gravel chapter. The next one is the surety increase. So this is one of the changes the board has inquired about for many years. I think you're probably going to be excited to hear about this. The proposed change involves increasing the amount of surety required for construction aggregate mine operators from $500 per acre to $3,850 per acre, and from the $20,000 statewide blanket to a $500,000 statewide blanket. This change is important. Over the last 25 years, approximately 60 licensed mine operators have abandoned their mine sites, leaving millions of dollars in reclamation liability with only, on average, a few hundred dollars per acre to cover the costs. We have communicated with many sand and gravel operators and industry associations, and we know that these proposed changes will have a significant financial impact on mining operators. In order to temper the impact of the surety increase, the bill provides a 2-year deferment of the construction aggregate surety increase to give existing sand and gravel operators time to adjust to the new requirement. Other surety-related changes to the sand and gravel chapter include expanding the types of acceptable surety operators may post to include irrevocable letters of credit, clarifying how the department processes surety on behalf of the board, and making provision for a joint powers agreement with any county or other local government that requires construction aggregate surety. So a couple of these things I'll go into a little more detail on since they're particular interest to the board. The bill makes it clear that the department may receive and process financial assurance such as CDs and surety bonds under the authority of the board. So the intent of this is to allow the department to serve as signatory on financial documents. All surety releases would still be approved by the board, but the intent is to have staff serve as signatory instead of the board chairman. This will eliminate quite a bit of administrative work on our end and hopefully for the chairman as well. Then the other proposed addition to the sand and gravel statute is the joint powers agreement authority. And this would allow the department to enter into agreements with counties or municipalities. So for instance, Minnehaha County requires a bond for construction aggregate mining. We could have an agreement, and the intent is to preclude duplicate or double bonding of a site. Okay, so I'm done with 45.6 now. I'm going to move on to chapter 45.6B, which deals with our mine permits. Okay, so the first proposed change to the mine permit requirements involves increasing the outdated surety cap for small scale mines. The increase would be from $2,500 per site, which is the current requirement, to actual reclamation cost up to a maximum bond of $38,500 per site. So just like the sand and gravel surety requirements, the mine permit requirements have not been updated since the early 1980s and are inadequate to cover reclamation costs. One point of clarification, this proposed surety increase pertains only to small-scale mine permits, since the large-scale financial assurance requirements currently consist of the operator posting surety amounting to actual reclamation costs, the large-scale surety amounts do not need to be amended. The second change under our mine permit chapter proposes changing, adding authority for the South Dakota Board of Minerals to promulgate financial assurance rules under 45.6B81. So this just adds in a specific line. There's already a list of things the board has authority to promulgate rules pertaining to mining on. It adds in financial assurance requirements. The goal underlying this change involves the department coming before the board over the next couple of years to propose rules outlining what constitutes acceptable financial assurance and what reclamation costs are covered by financial assurance. And then finally, I'll move over to chapter 45-6C. That's the mineral exploration chapter. The changes proposed there, just like under the other two chapters, the first change is a surety increase. It would increase the surety cap for mineral exploration operations from a $20,000 statewide blanket to a $100,000 statewide blanket. The second change under the mineral exploration chapter involves removing the 30-day self-activation period for exploration notices of intent. So exploration can only begin after the operator posts surety. Mm-hmm. Currently, there is some ambiguity regarding when an operator can commence exploration. The proposed language makes the requirement clear. I mentioned earlier that we received quite a bit of feedback from the construction aggregate industry regarding proposed sand and gravel surety increase. We also communicated with hard rock mining operators and interested parties, and no one has expressed concerns about the proposed changes to the mine permit and mine mineral exploration chapters. So we've received quite a bit of interest from sand and gravel, but nobody seems too concerned about the proposed changes to the mine permit or mineral exploration chapters. So I'll summarize. The proposed legislation does three main things. First is it revises limestone requirements in Chapter 45-6, leveling the playing field for producers of agricultural lime, allowing them to operate under the streamlined mine license process. The second thing the bill does is increases surety amounts for construction aggregate mining, small-scale permitted mining, and mineral exploration to protect the state and landowners from undue reclamation liability. And then the third thing is the bill updates various surety-related requirements for all three chapters to clarify and make the financial assurance process easier to understand and execute. So that was a lot. I will answer questions.
All right, thanks, Mike. And I do appreciate Mike had shared with me some initial drafts of the bills that I thought, as he's explained, or especially in regard to the sureties that we've struggled with over the years, and it's been a long time since they've been addressed. So I thought the drafts looked good. Mike, you don't have the bill in form yet?
I have the latest draft from LRC, but it has not dropped yet. I think it's supposed to drop either today or tomorrow. So
okay.
It will be available.
Could you just make a point to provide that to Brenda and then a copy to the board members so they have for convenience, that they have that and can review it a little more depth themselves?
Yes.
Okay. All right, questions from the board for Mike regarding the proposed legislation.
Chairman Hegg, Bob Morris.
Mr. Morris, go ahead.
Mike, I don't have the statute handy, but on a small scale mining permit, what's the maximum number of acres?
Mr. Morris, it's 10 acres.
And the proposed change in the law will be the actual cost of reclamation with a cap of $38,000?
It's $38,500 for the 10 acres.
Okay.
Would be the maximum of that. Yep.
What, so why was a cap placed on it? I mean, if you've got 10 acres, and it's the actual cost of reclamation is estimated to be $50,000. Why do we have a cap of $38,500?
The intent of the cap, as opposed to just having an actual reclamation cost, that probably will be about actual reclamation cost for most small scale mine sites, or will be adequate. But the underlying intention of the cap was just a balance between having adequate surety and not being overly burdensome for small mine operators.
Okay. Now, this cap will be in statute. So if there's an anomaly, a unique situation, does the board have the ability to override the cap? If in its discretion it is deemed necessary?
The way the bill is written, no, the board would not have authority to override that $38,500 cap.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Nice job.
Thank you.
Other questions from the board? Mike?
Mr. Chairman, Doyle Carpin.
Mr. Carpin, go ahead.
Yes, I want to thank Mr. Lee for this work and moving forward. Personally, I think it's a nice first step. It's definitely the old standards were pretty low, and the 38 per acre is, it's encouraging, but I don't know anywhere in the state where you could reclaim an acre of land for $3,850, because I would like to find that person, because I have some land I could have done.
I think it's, Mr. Carbon, I think it's $38,500.
Per, well, I'm looking at $3,850 per acre, not the cap.
Oh,
the cap is,
of the 10 acres, I get you. Okay.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Carpin, yeah, the $38,500 is the cap for the small-scale permitted mine, and then it is a little confusing because the per-acre reclamation requirement for the construction aggregate, sand and gravel, that's the $3,850 per acre.
Yes.
And the $3,850 per acre is based on estimates that the department developed in conjunction with the Department of Transportation and the actual costs they pay for contractors to go out and do dirt work similar in scope to what would happen at a gravel pit. So yeah, it is on the low end of the range of costs, but again, that's the balance, having adequate surety with not being overly burdensome to mine operators.
Mr. Chairman,
can you follow up, Doyle? Go ahead, yeah.
Yes, I was just a comment. I appreciate it. It's a long time coming, like I said before, because these numbers haven't changed for years. At least it's a little closer in range to where it is now. And I guess follow up on Mr. Morris. I kind of wish the legislatures would allow the board some latitude on, that cap at 38,500. A little bit. Give us some authority here. Thank you.
Mr. Please do. So just to make sure I clarify in my mind, don't have it in front of us here, is that it goes up to 10 acres. Is it limited by 3,850 an acre, or is the let's say it's a 5-acre deal, is it still a total of 38,500, or is it the per acre amount?
So we're speaking about chapter
small scale
45-6B. This would be small scale permanent mining. If it was a 1-acre site that we felt still would require $38,500 to reclaim, then that's what we would recommend to the board. So it's the only reason the $38,500 figure was in there is it would be consistent with what the amount is for the construction aggregate mining. If we thought it was going to cost $30,000 to reclaim a half acre site for some odd reason, then that's what we would recommend to the board.
Okay. So there is some latitude there. This would be, if it was maxed out at 10 acres, then it would boil down to 3,850. But you can apply the 38,500 to any number of acres, 10 or less, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that helps a little bit with that situation. And I know from past history, it's these increases in these sureties have met with some pretty good resistance. Is that accurate, Mike?
Yes, and like I mentioned, we haven't had any negative input from hard rock mining folks. We've had a lot of questions, but from the hard rock permitted industry, but we have had a lot of negative impact or negative comments from the construction aggregate community.
Okay. Well, I think the points made by the other board members may be important, that if there is a situation where it needed to exceed that, it would be, they'd have to follow, I assume, some laid out criteria as to what would cause the board to exceed these limits. But it may be something to at least consider what the appropriate criteria, I suppose.
Mr. Chairman, can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I phone a friend here and ask the small scale put in the room? I know that when Eric Holm talks, people listen. So if you want to get his perspective on the level of threat for small scale, Eric, would you mind?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eric.
Our current small scale permits, I had put a table together. Right now, the maximum acreage we have affected under small scale permits is 2.5 acres. So they're looking at maximum costs. A lot of these, you maybe have a simple pit where you can take a small bobcat and fill a hole in and then seed the area. With our current small-scale permits, I don't see us getting anywhere near that cap for now, unless somebody goes crazy. But knowing our current operators, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah. All right. It's always good to know the facts. Appreciate that. Any further questions from the board regarding the proposed bill? And I don't think it obviously doesn't require any action from us, but we appreciate being filled in, and I think that always is a common concern, or at least has been a concern since I've been on the board of these. And I don't mind the other minor issue of giving up signing off on these bonds that I get in the mail every other week. I think that probably preferable that the department does that. Okay, hey, before we close the issue, any other further discussion? All right, again, thanks, Mike, for the update, and if you could send out the draft bill once it's completed.
I will, thank you.
All right, the next order of business is the annual update on South Dakota Volkswagen Beneficiary Mitigation Plan. Barbara, are you present?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, and the board should have your packet there on the hopefully everybody's got that, so why don't you go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, and I'd like to wish the board and everyone out there listening a Happy New Year. Before I start in on the update, I'll kind of just give an overview of what the plan is, if there's anybody out there that isn't really familiar with it. In 2016, EPA and California filed a lawsuit against Volkswagen for installing a system in some of their diesel vehicles that cheated the emission controls and allowed nitrogen oxide pollution to exceed levels allowed by the Clean Air Act. As part of a court settlement, Volkswagen agreed to fund an environmental mitigation trust to be used to offset the excess pollution emitted by those non-compliant vehicles, and that was in the amount of about $3 billion. In order to receive the funds, the states needed to develop and submit a beneficiary mitigation plan to the trust. DANR was designated by the governor to be the lead agency in South Dakota to administer the state's allocation, which was $8.125 million. The trust allowed the plans to use 10 specific categories to offset those excess emissions. And the plan's a summary of which categories would be used and the anticipated percentage of funds to be used for each category. So in the handout on page 2, for South Dakota's plan, DANR drafted the plan and we had a lot of public input. And on August of 2018, the board approved the plan. In March of 2019, the governor signed a bill giving spending authority for Volkswagen trust funds. And each year, we kind of reevaluate the plan and see if we think there's any changes needed. In May of 2021, we went through a public process again and made some plan revisions. And those basically just kind of gave us a little more flexibility. We grouped some of the categories together, and instead of a set amount for each category, we gave a range. So that revised plan was approved by the board in May of 2021. And by October of 2027, at least 80% of the funds must be obligated. So under our current plan, we're running three different programs. One is a truck replacement rebate program, and that uses category one, which is for class 8 local freight trucks, and also category 6, which is for class 4 through 7 local freight trucks. In the current plan, that program is allowed 35 to 45% of the trust fund. The second program is a bus replacement rebate program. And in that program, we can use Category 2 funds, which are for Class 4 through 8 buses. And we can also use Category 10, which is the DEER option, and I'll give some more details on that later. For that program, it's also allowed 35 to 45% of the funds. And the third program is for electric vehicle charging stations. That uses Category 9, which is for light-duty, zero-emission vehicle supply equipment. Currently, that program is allowed 10 to 15% of the funds. And then for administration, 2.5% to 10% of the funds are allowed for administration. On page 3 of the handout, I'll talk a little more about the truck program. The Volkswagen truck rebate program provides rebates for replacing old diesel trucks with new cleaner trucks. It is open to state and local government agencies. We're having 2 rounds per year open for applications in January and June. For rounds 1 through 3, we offered a rebate percentage of 25%. We weren't really getting too many applications, so for rounds 4 and 5, we tried 50% rebates. And then we received way too many applications. So for rounds 6 through 9, the rebate amount has been 35%. For 2024, we'll be having rounds 10 and possibly 11. The remaining about $305,000 of truck rebate funds will be available. And round 10 is currently open and will be closing on January 26th. So far for the truck program, what we've actually paid out is a little over $2 million. We have an additional about $1.3 million obligated, which is projects that we have agreements for, but they're not completed yet, but we expect to pay that much extra. So if we use the maximum amount in the trucks, there's that $305,000 that still remains.
Barb, this is the chairman. Before, I think what after each category, instead of waiting until the end, see if the board has any questions regarding the truck program, C1 and C6. Any questions from the board? Okay, go ahead, Barb.
Okay. The next program is for buses. And we have been running the State Clean Diesel Grant Program for replacing old diesel buses with new cleaner buses since about 2009. So with these Volkswagen funds and that Option 10 DEER option, we can use that money with that current program. So when we do that, we get a base amount of EPA funding for DERA, and if we use the Volkswagen Category 10 funds for match, EPA will give us a bonus funding from DERA of 50% of that base amount. If we get a lot of applications, we can also use funds from the Category 2, and then we are also using funds for administration for the bus program. Unlike the truck program where we could set the rebate amount, since we're using it with DERA, we have to use their rebate percentages. So what that has been is 25% for buses with engines that meet the current emission standards, or 35% for engines meeting the CARB low NOx standards, And every round we do get a few of those for schools that are getting propane buses instead of cleaner diesel buses. We also do offer 45% for electric buses, but we've never received an application for those. Right now, round 16 is open. It opened in November of 23. We have agreements sent out for 19 buses, which would be rebates of around $780,000. Those agreements are due back to the department in mid-February. So as of November, that should be 2023, the amount that was actually paid out was around $1,880,000. And there is another $200,000 that is obligated where they haven't gotten their buses yet. So that leaves about $1.576 million left for the bus program.
Okay. Just for the Barb, for the new board members, just give a short explanation of what DERA means there.
So DERA stands for Diesel Emissions Reduction Act. So it's a federal program, and you can use it for different projects that would reduce pollution from diesel engines. So the South Dakota program that we've been doing since 2009, we've been helping schools get new buses by providing rebates.
Okay. Further questions from Barb, from the board on the buses? Hearing none, let's go ahead and move to the charging stations.
Okay, the charging stations are under Volkswagen Category 9, and the maximum allowed by the trust for this category is 15%. The rebates we've been allowing are up to 80% per charging station and installation. And at the time of our last update for round one, we had projects for Mitchell and Chamberlain. In round two, we had projects for Vermilion, Huron, Yankton, Aberdeen, Pier, Brookings, Myrtle, and Spearfish. So since then, four of the projects have dropped out. Those were the ones in Chamberlain, Huron, Yankton, and Aberdeen. And of the remaining ones, Mitchell and Pier are still under construction, and Vermilion, Brookings, Myrtle, and Spearfish have been completed. So the expended amount for those completed ones was about $414,000. And for those two that are still not completed, there's an additional $178,000 obligated. Since we got that money turned back for those four projects, we opened up round three, and we are taking applications through March 13th of 2024. Any questions on that?
Questions from the board for the charging stations. I know we've talked about that in the past, of trying to get more of them located in the state, but so are there any questions from the board regarding that? All right, proceed.
Chairman Egg, this is Bob Morris.
Go ahead, Bob.
Mute off. Barb, we've got the VW program with the charging stations. I believe under the recent legislation from Washington, there were a substantial amount of funds that went toward electric vehicles. Are you seeing a focus moving for perhaps for funding from VW
to that program, or has the VW program even been affected by the newer program that has been come from Washington?
So DOT did submit their plan for electric vehicle infrastructure deployment, and that was approved in September of 22. With that approved plan, they have $29 million that they can use for charging stations through 2026. But as far as I can tell, they haven't started anything yet.
Okay, thank you.
Barbara, they, Mr. Chairman again, do have there been any charging stations placed at rest areas?
No, there haven't, and I think as far as I know, how the laws are now is that anything that would charge a fee is not allowed at a rest station.
I see. All right.
Okay, on handout six, there's a map showing where the public, existing public charging stations are. So right now the map shows the four fast chargers that have been funded with Volkswagen mitigation funds, and hopefully by my next update, at least those other two will be on there. There are 10 Tesla fast chargers in the state, 18 other fast chargers, and 62 level two chargers, which are the slower chargers. Right now, it seems like most of the concentration is either in Sioux Falls or in the Black Hills area. We're slowly getting a decent coverage along the interstate.
Has there been any, I know I've heard off and on, I guess, whether Tesla would intend to allow their stations to be used. Is that, do these to be exclusive? I don't know if they still are to their own brand, but what's the status here on that?
I guess I heard that there were adapters available, but I guess I don't know if anywhere in South Dakota has those adapters. And right now, some of the other automobile makers, it sounds like they're switching over to that North America charging standard, which is what Tesla uses. So I'm thinking the newer vehicles will be able to use those stations without an adapter.
Okay. All right. Go ahead and finish if you'd like.
Okay. And on page seven, the administrative cost, what the trust allows is a 15% for that category. What we have our range set at currently is 2.5% to 10%. What's been expended through November of 2023 is around $226,000. So if we use the maximum remaining funds in administration, that leaves about $587,000 remaining. I guess any questions on the administration costs?
Questions from the board on the administration costs? Are you, do you have any final comments there, Barb, or are you finished?
So as kind of a summary, the total trust funds were $8.125 million, and so far we have expended or obligated $6.249 million, so that's 77% of the total, so we're getting really close to that 80% that we need to have done by October of 2027. So for now, we're planning to just carry on with the current plan, and then to reevaluate again at the end of next year, or this year.
And all right, anyone, sounds like.
Oh, if anyone
sounds like your
information, find that on the department's website under air quality and the Volkswagen Trust. So, any other questions?
Questions from the board for Barb before we release her? Thank you for the update, Barb. Sounds like we're on pretty much on track to have that completed by the deadlines. All right. That concludes the business agenda. We'll next item on the agenda is the public comment period. Are there any members of the public that are either attending in peer or have called in that would like to make a comment regarding the business before the board or other matters related to the board? If so, this would be the time for you to speak, and why don't you go ahead and make yourself known if that is the case.
Mr. Chairman, this is Matt Zelo, Environmental Manager at WRF. Just actually wanted to express our thanks to the board and to Eric in particular for the quick and concise review and moving forward with our bond exchange.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Further comments from the public regarding the business of the board? I had noted from Brenda, that there may be a caller or two that we're going to be on, but has anybody indicated to you they'd like to make any comments?
No, they haven't.
Okay. All right. Hearing no further comments, we will close the public comment period and discuss our next meeting and whether we can do that by phone or appearance. Brenda, what would be the update there?
Well, no one has contacted me regarding agenda items, so I had it penciled in for our next meeting to be March 21st and skip February.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Any further matters to come before the board or questions or comments from the board members before we adjourn?
Chairman Hagg, this is Mike Lees. If I could just give an update on some personnel changes in the Minerals Mining and Superfund program.
Sure, go ahead.
Just wanted to make the board aware that we've had three retirements in the last 3 months. So Mike Erickson, the longtime team leader of the construction aggregate team, retired. And Brett Graves of the team has stepped up and assumed duties as a team leader there. Patty McQuay, who has been our program assistant for many, many years, retired also here this month. And so we'll be finding a replacement for her to coordinate all the surety communication with the board. And then Mark Keenahan, our engineer who worked out in the Rapid City office for many years, also retired recently. So just wanted to, and neither Mark nor Patty have been replaced yet, but just kind of wanted to let you know that.
Well, we want to thank them for their work. For me, I worked quite closely with Patty on these surety matters, and so shouldn't be missed there, definitely, from a personal experience. So I want to thank them for their work, and hopefully they'll get somebody on board that can take that over. All right. If there be no further comments or questions from the board, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Carpen moved to adjourn.
Motion by Carpen. Is there a second? Or is everybody just having too much fun?
Wait a little second.
Motion by Carpenter. I think I heard a second by Peterson. Secretary, call the roll on adjournment.
Blumhardt?
Aye.
Ewing? Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hag?
Aye.
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Chairman Hag?
Aye. Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you.